Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economics show entitled Money Matters. Before we begin, please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending us an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com or by visiting our website, moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
And welcome to the 207th show of your economic forum entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Today's show is entitled Give the Baby His Bottle. The Fed Blinks Again. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. I'm going to answer some listener call-ins today. Listener letters, talk a little bit about real estate, some new Treasury Department regulations, more on the oil industry, some bond sales, and some economic stats on employment. Talk a little bit more about the Bank of Japan and the Federal Reserve's announcement yesterday, another announcement. First in the Money Matters mailbag, send me an email. Wherever you're listening to the show, at kvmr.org, moneymatters@kvmr.org. I answer each and every email sent to me, regardless of the questions that you ask. But keep them specific to the market and general questions about the show. Don't ask me about any specific holdings. And I answer everyone that emails me. So there you go. And so, Mark, I have a pile of your CDs, your shows. Is there a show on using trusts and their pros and cons for use as a family investment or as a tool for family capital? Well, you know, I like this email a lot, this question. I have covered trusts a little bit, but never done a show on family trusts. So, I was very excited when I saw this email, so I'm going to do a show on estates and trusts. We're going to have a state attorney in here. That'll probably take place sometime next month. So thank you, Michael, for that suggestion. Yeah, I'm going to do a show on family trust. That was a great idea. I thought I covered everything, but you never know. Michael also asks, how do you get out of reverse mortgage? I have a disc on reverse mortgages, but how do you get out of one? That's a good question. My show did not cover on how to get out. I only covered on how to get in. I'm not a big fan of reverse mortgages unless you absolutely need one because of the fact that they're very, very expensive. So I suggested that he kind of look up, you know, on the web or contact the person that holds the reverse mortgage for you. Obviously, they would know. I'm sure it's not industry specific, but more lender specific. So you'd have to call the lender. And I also got a question on tax implications for overseas investments, probably referring to the Swiss annuities we've held for years and years. And there are a few accountants that know about them. Mine does now. And so you'll just have to find somebody that's familiar with the FATCA regulations, the FATCA, F-A-T-C-A, the Federal Compliance Act on Foreign Investments. And make sure you get an attorney, I mean, an accountant that knows about it. Otherwise, they'll charge you to do the research. I'm not a big fan of that. I don't think an attorney or accountant should charge you to research something they should already know about. And then finally, do you still recommend holding currencies, foreign currencies? The currencies that I have are, continue to go down, and I'm worried about losing money. Yes, I continue to recommend holding foreign currencies. They're like insurance Foreign currencies are a anti-U.S. dollar play. And if foreign currencies are dropping, that means your U.S. dollar holdings are going up. Now, you won't see the balance on your U.S. dollar holdings going up. Indeed, your savings accounts won't go up on your statement, but your foreign currency accounts will go down. That's because you're here in the United States. If you hold dollars and you're here in the United States, your balances don't change. But if you hold Swiss francs and you're here in the United States, because your balances are told to you in the United States in U.S. dollars, and the Swiss franc value would go down in relation to the dollars. However, if you are in Switzerland and you hold a Swiss franc account, the dollar increase or decrease would be showed in your U.S. dollar holdings, and your Swiss franc balances wouldn't move. So just because your foreign currencies are moving doesn't mean that your U.S. dollars aren't going up. Indeed, they are going up. That's why you're able to buy more things. Deflation is what we're seeing, and one of the things you can buy a heck of a lot more of right now is gasoline. So although your foreign currencies, you may be down 5, 10, 15, 20% in your foreign currency holdings, how much have you saved on your gas bills? Probably a lot more than you've lost in your currencies, and that's the whole reason for holding foreign currencies against U.S. dollars. If your U.S. dollars get stronger, you can buy more here. And indeed, gasoline bills have come down 30-40%. So if you're filling up your tank twice a week at $50, you know, you're saving 50 to 100 bucks a month in gas. If you have a truck, or you're a contractor or a painter, you're saving even more. So, no. Foreign currencies are an insurance policy against the demise of the U.S. dollar, or at least a weakening of the U.S. dollar, which is going to happen. Trust me, it's going to happen. The U.S. dollar will eventually weaken. It will happen. But right now, it's the ugliest pig in a beauty contest. So it is extremely strong. And I've told you, the U.S. government is going to have to do something about the strength of the U.S. dollar. Because when the dollar gets stronger, our firms that sell overseas, the big corporations that we all love and admire, are indeed complaining that they're adjusting their sales because they're selling less. They're getting smashed by currency returns. Because when the U.S. dollar goes up, the goods they sell overseas are more expensive. It takes more Swiss francs to buy a tractor, more euros to buy a computer that's made here. I warned that the Federal Reserve would have to do something about it. Indeed, they have mentioned it yesterday that they are looking at it very closely. The impacts on sales of exports from U.S. companies in relation to the U.S. dollar strength. So they're looking at that. So I would not be surprised that intervention will come soon on behalf of the Federal Reserve. We're going to talk a little bit more about what they said yesterday in just a bit, but we'll go on with some stats, of course. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we'll be right back. You don't want to pay some more. And you are tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today, no matter where you're listening to the broadcast. So thanks for joining us today. Remember, you can always send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org or directly to the program director at the station that you're listening to the show on. Housing starts slumped in February by the most in 4 years. Rather interesting. They go on to say, as bad winter weather prevented builders from initiating new projects. Well, they always have an excuse. Don't know what the truth is about that one. We're going to see. I would imagine spring should be a little bit better. But the worst in 4 years, new housing starts. That was down 17% from January. Annualized, 897,000 houses will be started, according to the February annualized figures. And that's the worst in 4 years. The median estimate was over a million. Richard Moody, chief economist at Regions Financial Corp in Birmingham. It was just the weather, basically. My view of the recovery in single-family housing is that it's coming more gradually than others think. Okay. So we'll keep an eye on housing starts. No word yet on used homes for sale, how that's going. A friend of mine just listed a home in Nevada City here in Northern California and sold it in 3 days. That, in my opinion, is a sign that the realtor didn't do their job. If you sell a house in 3 days, people say, my realtor was great. He sold the house in 3 days. No, that means the house was underpriced and you lost money. So I'm a firm believer, whatever the realtor tells you, add $50,000 or, I don't know, add 5, 10% on it at least. And if you don't get an offer in 30 days, then cut the price. But any house that sells in 3 days means it was underpriced. So I'm sure a lot of realtors out there would argue with me, but that's the way I feel about it. I've bought and sold a lot of real estate in my time, and not as someone making commission on it, but someone that's making the money off of it. So I'm real careful what I buy them for and real careful what I sell them for. And the new Treasury Department regulations announced in September squashed many of the incentives for tax-driven mergers called inversions, which were all the rage last year. Now, an inversion, Mylan Pharmaceuticals did an inversion. An inversion, what happens is the U.S. companies buy another company overseas or taken over by a company overseas, and they move their headquarters there. And then they say they're foreign companies and not subject to U.S. taxes, called an inversion. So Burger King did an inversion, and Medtronic and Mylan, I think, did an inversion. Critics say that mega corporations were essentially changing their address to avoid paying the IRS. Well, it's legal. So, you know, until they change the tax laws, I have no problem with it if it's legal. If it's illegal, then I have a big problem with it. Anything that is, quote, illegal, I have a problem with. If you don't like the illegality of it, then change the law. But as long as it is illegal, don't do it. And as long as it is legal, I may not like it, but it's still legal. So, because the Treasury Department cracked down on the regulations of inversions, a new tactic has emerged. I tell you, when you squash down on businesses, they find other ways to get around them. American companies are now becoming takeover targets. Experts say the crackdown has encouraged companies looking for tax advantage to reverse the process, turning smaller American firms into attractive targets for large foreign rivals. So they get another company to buy them out and operate over there. Larger foreign firms are now advantaged acquirers of U.S. assets, and American companies are more likely to become smaller via divestitures to facilitate these transactions. Inversions, kind of an interesting tactic. Again, the more you squeeze, the more people pop out. And as warned about bonds and warned about bonds in the energy market. The energy market and its related investments control 38% or make up 38% of the bond market. The bond market is the largest market in the world. It's debt. Bonds are debt. 38% of the bonds of the world are thought to be energy related. and a junk bond is a higher paid bond, higher yielding bond, money lent to companies that are questionable as far as financial strength is concerned. And just out, investors lured back into junk-related, junk-rated energy bonds by their juicy yields are getting burned. Oil prices have fallen, continue to fall, and they've fallen more than 15% since March 4th alone to a six-year low of $43.50 a barrel. This has wiped out $7 billion of market value of high-yielding debt issued by energy companies. So we're seeing that the default in energy bonds held by marginal energy producers are going under, and that is causing contagion in other junk bond markets. So it's a sharp reversal, this crash in junk bonds. In as soon back as February, as recently back as February, where the yield-starved bond market was screaming upwards as investors who can't get any money in a savings account were buying high-yield bonds. And now they're starting to regret that. So we'll see what happens in the bond market. More energy companies have filed for bankruptcy. Some smaller ones have filed. And it will go up the chain. We found out who was swimming naked when oil prices crashed. Those that were marginal had marginal profits, of course. So a lot of the smaller oil companies, some of them are now starting to go 4 feet up, belly up. And we will see more go belly up if oil continues to go down, or indeed, even if oil stays where it is, more companies will fold, which will cause more havoc in the bond market. So we will see oil is down again. It's continually get hammered. It's ugly out there for sure. And oil output, meanwhile, climbs to the highest level in three decades. Even as oil companies are suffering from lower oil prices, the output is continuing up. That's because if you're an oil company and you're losing money on oil, you have to pay your bills still, so you sell even more oil to pay your bills, to get money to pay your bills. And that causes more oil to come on the market, which causes more price softness in the oil market. So you have your marginal company and you're producing oil and you're not making much as much per barrel, or maybe you're losing money per barrel, but you still got to pay your bills. So you have to up your production to make even more. We're not making as much on a barrel, so we have to produce more barrels in order to pay our bills. And the U.S. Storage is about 70% capacity and is going up still. So the slump of oil has knocked off about 2.3% in the junk bond market, as we mentioned previously. So we're going to have to watch oil prices. I'm sure you're loving it at the gas pump. But, you know, I've noticed that I'm paying $3.50 again. Boy, that was quick. Down and then back up. And trouble in Brazil. A friend of mine sent me a photograph of estimate 1 million people on the Constitucion Way, downtown Sao Paulo, wanting the President Dilma Rousseff to leave. And somebody in the gym told me they have a water problem down there. The drought problem is affecting them down there. And there was warning to leave the city. I don't know how you'd do that. Sao Paulo, Brazil, I think, is the second largest city in the world. How do you leave that? Where are you going to go? So anyway, the economy in Brazil is in shambles. The Brazilian currency is plummeting against the U.S. dollar. The economy is on the brink of its deepest recession in a quarter century. And so Brazil has implemented some austerity measures, government spending cutbacks. And, of course, there's an opposition to austerity all over the planet. So Brazil is in trouble, as many other countries are in trouble. Greece, of course. I don't think I'm talking about Greece anymore. We've talked about Greece so much on this show because they're in so much trouble. Brazil, the Latin America's largest economy, is forecast to contract the most since 1990 this year. Higher taxes and a weaker currency are causing more inflation, and Brazil is known for it, as is Argentina. Brazilians march in every one of the nation's 26 states, with more than a quarter of the protesters in the city of Sao Paulo calling for Rousseff's impeachment. Man, when the Brazilians take to the streets, it's major. I've been down there many times, and boy, they get together. They go out in the streets. Everybody goes. So, Bank of Japan, meanwhile, is doing its own QE. Shinzo Abe and his Bank of Japan Governor Haruhiko Kuroda says that they will maintain to expand the monetary base at an annual pace of $660 billion, which is 80 trillion yen. So they're printing like crazy, and they're 26 years into the recession. On again, off again. They cannot stimulate inflation. They're trying to get inflation to rise. Yet, now we have a decline in energy costs. So the Bank of Japan is printing and printing and printing, and isn't that a familiar word here on Money Matters? And yes, it is. We're in a giant state of currency wars where all the countries are printing like crazy. And they're all dropping interest rates to zero. And we talked a little bit about negative interest rates on the last show. And I read an article today that negative interest rates could be coming to the United States. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to borrow at a negative interest rate or lend at a negative interest rate. Negative interest rates is you lend somebody money and they give you back less than what you lent them. But on the bond markets, investors are loaning money, and in return for a bond that pays less than you lent, than the amount that you lent out. So go figure that one. So the Bank of Japan is going to continue its quantitative easing. The governor of Bank of Japan, Haruhiko Kuroda, I think I got that right, says he's counting on business leaders to pump more of their record cash holdings and profits into higher wages to sustain an economic recovery and counter a slowdown in inflation. Nearly 2 years since the Bank of Japan has introduced its unprecedented easing, which is probably its seventh or eighth program, inflation has slowed to just about one-tenth of its 2% target as tumbling oil prices ripple through the economy. You've got the same problem here. If you call falling prices a problem, do you think falling prices are a problem? As a consumer, I like falling prices. But the governments don't like falling prices. They think that that will make a deflationary trap. And we've explained that on the show many times. A deflationary trap is when prices fall, so you don't buy in hopes of waiting for lower prices tomorrow, versus an inflationary spiral where you buy today fearing higher prices tomorrow. So Federal Reserve and European Central Bank and all the other central banks in the world, including the Bank of Japan, are trying to cause inflation to destroy your savings. Remember, 2% inflation wipes out half of your savings in 36 years. 2%. So if you want to retire with $1 million, 36 years, it'll only buy what $500,000 will buy. That's their target. So they're targeting half of your savings in 36 years. If inflation goes to double that, the rate drops in half to 18 years. So if you're saving money, you better be earning at least that amount in inflation to offset the loss in purchasing power. There you go. So, on with the Bank of Japan. And Janet Yellen, of course, came out yesterday with an announcement. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Tuned to KVMR FM in Nevada City. Looks like we have a couple of calls coming in. Why don't we take a few? You're live on the air with Money Matters. Yeah.
Hey, what can you say about tax certificates?
What about tax certificates?
Well, I hear they pay pretty good interest.
Well, you know, the attorneys forbid me from talking about tax certificates, and I'm not specifically clear about what you're asking me. Can you explain a little bit more?
Buying somebody's property taxes?
Oh, you know, I don't know much about that. You have another question?
No, thank you.
All right. Yeah, I don't know much about that. I'm sure I could research it, but it's not in the typical realm of what I invest in anyway. So anyway, the markets were geared, and it's kind of a circus of the absurd, in my opinion and in the opinion of many, that the markets were so hung up on whether she was going to remove the word patient, one word, whether she was going to remove the word patient, and whether the Federal Reserve would raise rates in April or June. I mean, the markets were all hung up on the word patient. I mean, the markets have become such a farce in a way where, you know, hundreds of points on the Dow could be swayed by whether she left out one word or not. And apparently, she'd been reading the news because she was very sensitive when she said, well, we're going to take the word patient out. Anyway, so she was so hung up on losing patience from the statement, then she did remove it. She said, well, Federal Reserve is going to be looking at data, and we are going to remove the word patience from our statement. But that does not mean that we're not going to still take time in raising rates. In fact, she said that their next meeting is April, and that they were probably not going to raise rates in April. So that means the next the next possibility from them raising rates would be in June. And so she goes on to say, these were remarks that she made yesterday, which is why the market ran yesterday, that we're going to look be data dependent, and even though we've reached our thresholds as far as employment, unemployment, and reached our thresholds along some other means, she said that inflation was still below their target. Remember, they want to spur inflation, and the housing remained kind of stagnant, so they were going to be patient. Now, the market loved it. I mean, they just zoom. And what got me is she was so careful in when she said, we're going to remove the word patient, but basically saying, don't freak out, Dow, but we are probably not going to do it in April, and we'll see about June, and we're going to be data dependent. So it was so careful. It was just so pandering to Wall Street. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And it was really a joke, just really a joke. Anyway, the markets loved it and ran. Off they went to the races. The dollar plummeted. The euro skyrocketed and gold took off. And then this morning, of course, we're right back to where we were before. Now the markets are kind of, you know, now digesting what she said. Dow is down 95. Crude oil has continued its run down, still falling. Now you would think, oh, that's good, but the markets don't like it. Don't too much of a good thing, according to the markets, is definitely causing problems. I mean, a little bit of drop in oil is okay, but what we've seen now is way beyond what anybody expected. Indeed, beyond what I expected. So I'm sure we like it because oil prices are down, but Wall Street sees the problem that low oil prices can cause, which is problems in the bond markets because a lot of oil companies will not be able to pay their bills. So some bonds will default. Some oil companies will go under. I have just read estimated loss of employment through the plunge in oil will cause anywhere from 100,000 to a quarter million jobs to be lost, mainly in Texas and in the oil fields in Canada and in the Dakotas, where all the shale oil is manufactured and pulled out of the ground. And so the unemployment there is going to spike. Now, it's interesting. You know, I've always said that the Federal Reserve here would not be able to stop quantitative easing, and if they did, they would resume it. And if they did raise rates, it would only be about 0.25%. I doubted that they would stop QE, yet they did, although they're doing other programs that are similar to it. The outright QE, I thought they would probably not stop, and they did stop it. I keep saying that the Feds won't be able to raise rates, and if they do, it'll only be 0.25% because they've promised they will do it, and they don't want to look bad. So out today, Peter Schiff, who was the CEO of Euro-Pacific Capital, has moved on to greener pastures, says that the Fed is bluffing. Says Peter Schiff, who ought to know a thing or two about debt and interest rates. He was the largest bond manager on the planet. Peter Schiff says that the Fed has been bluffing the entire time. It has no intention of raising rates, but it can't come clean and admit that. So it has to pretend it's going to do something it's not going to do. And it has to do that so it doesn't reveal the fragility of the U.S. economy. Now, do you think the U.S. economy can weather a rate increase? Now, I think it could weather a 0.25% rate increase, which is nothing. It's not going to help you with your savings account. Peter Schiff has long maintained there has not been a recovery in the economy. Recent economic data like retail sales, housing starts, and industrial production have indeed helped his case. Labor market is strong, if you believe what the Bureau of Labor Statistics is telling us. The economy has been adding more than 200,000 jobs to the economy each, has been adding 200,000 jobs each month for more than a year. But he's also saying that employment numbers don't tell the whole story. I don't think people leaving the labor force in disgust because they can't find jobs is a good sign. And I will add to that, remember that when they leave the labor force because they can't find a job, then you are now no longer counted as unemployed. Peter Schiff goes on to say, so many people are settling for part-time jobs and low-paying jobs, and those are counted as employed. We have college students, says Peter, some with master's degrees, cooking French fries part-time. And that, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, counts as a job. But I don't think that that guy thinks he's employed. Fed went on to say it needs to see further improvement in the labor market and inflation to hit that elusive 2% target that I told you about. 2% destroying your wealth by half in 36 years. Peter Schiff believes inflation is going to approach and exceed 2%, but he still doesn't think the Fed will do anything. They will move the goalpost like they did with unemployment. The Feds used to say if unemployment rates got below 6.5%, we're going to raise rates. Of course, it's at 5.5%, and Peter Schiff says they are still waiting. Schiff believes the Fed will be just as tolerant toward inflation. I agree with him. When inflation hits 2.5% or 3%, Schiff believes there still will not be a rate increase. But believe me, when it's officially at 3%, it's going to be a lot higher than that, he says. And consumers are really going to be feeling the pain. And I agree with him. We interviewed Mr. Schiff years ago. Bright, bright man. And he is really on to it. Now, I did mention that Peter Schiff had left Europe Pacific Capital, but I got him confused with Bill Gross, so I want to correct that with you right now. Peter Schiff is the CEO of Euro Pacific Capital. He did not manage one of the largest bond funds in the world. That was Bill Gross. So I'm sorry for that. I make a correction there. But he's still a man worth listening to for sure. And he's one of the few people that actually publicly called for the housing blow-up years before it happened, as did this analyst, which is what made the show so popular. People called me a nut when I said that the bank system would blow up and the housing markets would crash. Well, they're not calling us nuts anymore. Peter Schiff is predicting QE4 and the collapse of the dollar. He says eventually the Feds will be back up against the wall. They're going to have to jack interest rates way up, and then all hell is going to break loose. It's going to make 2008 look like a Sunday school picnic. Now, I have to take what he says there with tongue-in-cheek. Collapse of the dollar, that's going to be relative. When you think of collapse of the dollar, you're going to think it's going to collapse like the Mexican peso. And I don't think we're going to see that. I think toward the end it's going to get very ugly, but we are not there yet. Feds are going to mess around with this thing. Remember, Japan has tried this for 26 years, and they're still surviving, although albeit rather anemic. So the markets took off. They are down again today, as I mentioned. Right now, on Thursday, 12:47 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Dow's down 110. Gold's up 1.63% at 1170 an ounce. And crude oil is down again, sitting at $45.56 a barrel. So it's going to be very, very interesting what we're going to see here. Gold is finally moving. I don't know if this is the real deal with gold. I don't know yet. I said when gold started to move a month and a half ago, it is time to start nibbling on gold stocks. My lowest prognostication was gold at $915 for silver. $15 had hit silver, and then now it was a little bit lower. So it's actually got a little lower. Gold has not hit 900. We don't know whether this is a head fake from gold and it could go back down, or is this is the real deal and a turnaround. But if you like gold at $1,900 an ounce, you got to like it down here at 1170. So I was starting to add gold stocks, albeit last month. They've been kind of hammered, but I'm not all in on it for sure. And so I'm adding lightly, and I'm going to see what it's going to do. It's interesting that it is holding up today. I thought it might back off, but it is not. It is still rising, so we're going to see how that pans out. What do you think? You can give me a call. I got a couple of minutes, 530-265-9555, to take your questions. Or you can always send me an email at moneymatters@kivyamar.org. You can sign up for our newsletter, A Grata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. You can send me an email, at moneymatters@kvmr.org, or just go to moneymanagementradio.com and sign up for your free newsletter there. Don't spam you or sell your email addresses or anything like that. Just basic market talk like I'm speaking now. So we're going to see what happens in the next couple of days. I think the next couple of days are going to be critical on how the market digests this, and then I think we're going to see skittishness again. I think they're going to believe that Janet Yellen will not raise rates in April. But June will now become the next feared date. And as we approach June, I think the markets are going to get dicey. And I think they're going to be volatile now. I mean, they are fairly volatile right now. This 18,000 level. Now, this was interesting. We touched 18,000 a few times. And I said, if 18,000 held for a few days, it's probably off to the races to 19,000. Now, 18,000 did hold. Now it's broken below it again. So now we're going to have to retest 18,000. So we're back to a redo, a do-over. And we're going to see whether it can get over 18,000. If it starts to correct further down, 17,500, 17,200, then we're in for a significant correction, I believe, until the next bout. So don't know whether the markets are going to believe Yellen or not. Right now, I don't think anybody knows what to do. Which means that the Money Matters portfolio is probably, in my opinion, the safest place you should be again, which is distributed over dividend stocks and gold and silver holdings and maybe a little bit of real estate and a lot of money in a savings account. You want over half your money in a savings account. Maybe some laddered short-term CDs. Stay away from bonds, except for short-term U.S. Treasury bonds. I'll tell you that. Stay away from bonds. Maintain your gold and silver physical holdings, you know, 5% or 10% of your net worth in physical gold as insurance, and 5 or 10% in foreign currencies. Foreign currencies are a much better buy than they were a while ago. And I think this U.S. dollar trade is over. I think the U.S. dollar had its run, and I think its run is over. You never can tell. I don't think the euro fall is over. As the International Monetary Fund continues to print more euros, I think that's going to maybe have a bounce, but it's probably going to fall back down. But I think the U.S. dollar run is over. I don't think the U.S. corporations will let the Federal Reserve continue to allow the U.S. dollar to climb. It's just hurting export sales too badly, and we're going to see a reversal there. For your average folks like me, keep working hard. If you don't have a lot of money, park it in a savings account. If you have a lot of money, then spread it out a little bit more according to the Money Matters portfolio. You can always send me an email to ask about that portfolio. And be careful. If you're all in stocks and bonds, which I see a lot from advisors and firms and the rest, if you're all in stocks and bonds, listener, beware. I think that's a dangerous position to be in. A stock and bond route will wipe you out again, so you have to be careful. Some of our dividend payers on the super dividend payers list are hitting new highs, and I'm going to be adding some more to that list soon. Some great companies on there. Some of the oil stocks are down. I think that oil and energy stocks, only the big ones, are starting to become in the blue light special sales item. So I would look at some of those for long-term holdings, long-term. There are some people, T. Boone Pickens, the big oil magnet, is whatever they call him, is predicting $100 oil in 12, 24 months. So T. Boone ought to know. He's an oil giant. But I could show you another five articles that show you that oil's going to $30. We're not far from it now. $45. Would you ever think you would have seen that? So let's take a phone call here. You're live on the air with Money Matters.
Hi, Mark Ross here. How are you doing?
Good, Ross. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, maybe with the oil getting so cheap, I don't know, rare earth elements for high storage batteries, I don't know, are they going to get more expensive? We're going to see a downturn in battery development because people can just use the internal combustion engine. It's so cheap to run. And anyway, that wasn't my main question. My main question was the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes.
And it's what I guess talks like NAFTA are going on in secret right now that we don't really have access to. And I'm just wondering what you think is going to come out of these talks, and are we going to see the same kind of society-wide changes that NAFTA brought with the TPP? They say it's 40% of what world trade.
Yeah, I'm going to drop you off the call. I'm running out of time, I'll take it off the air, okay?
Thanks, Mark. Bye-bye. Right.
Well, you know, the with the oil markets right now, you know, I don't know, and I don't know if any agreements are going to be reached short term, because it's just too volatile right now. Remember, this whole world revolves around money, and right now it's all revolving around oil. So I really don't know. I think you're going to see a lot of stalling in any energy talks whatsoever, even pipelines. And that goes for solar. Where's solar going to go? That goes along with where's Tesla going to go? Rare earths. You know, rare earths have been hammered with commodities. Some of the rare earth companies, Molycorp and some of the other ones, are just barely able to survive. And so this fall in commodities has affected so many other markets, solar market, electric cars, pipeline construction. I mean, it has really put a damper on a short-term view, and they're all going to be after looking at longer-term views here. NAFTA. You know, you could say that is free trade good. It has definitely decimated wages, here in the United States, and grown wages overseas. So anytime you open up your borders. I've always said that the higher wages of the United States are now dragging up the wages of the emerging markets, and the emerging market wages are dragging down the prices of American-made goods. So you have a battle there. It's one of our problems. Manufacturing has been lost for a variety of reasons. NAFTA is one of them. You know, how do you compete with a guy in China making $1 an hour when unions are paying their longshoremen what? $120,000 a year plus $80,000 a year pension. So, there's cross currents here with the oil falling and now becoming even more magnified. It's going to be interesting, you know. Will solar continue to take off? I think it will. It's getting cheaper. Will electric cars continue to take off? I think they will. I think if you won't buy an electric car now because oil is cheap, or you're going to use a combustion engine, such as Ross had said, because oil's cheap, I think that's short-sighted. I mean, I was laughing at the fact that SUV sales are up. I mean, you got to be kidding me. You'd buy an SUV now because oil is cheap? Don't you believe that oil can go back up? Or not buy an electric car because oil is cheap? I don't even see that reasoning. So, you know, do we build the Keystone Pipeline or any of these other negotiations that are going on? I think it's all going to be put on hold. I really do. I think nobody's going to make any decisions on any of this based on this transient oil price that we're seeing. Remember, this price of oil has dropped within 6 months like a rock. You can't base any future agreements or any future projects on today's oil price. You don't know where it's going to go. So, difficult questions. You have been listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Show number 207. Give the baby his bottle. The Fed blinks again, and Janet Yellen has done that. We removed the word patient. We removed some of the bottle for you, but we're still going to give you more. This is Money Matters Show 207. Give the baby his bottle. The Fed blinks again. Send me questions and comments on the show at moneymatters@kvmart.org, or email your program director at the station you're listening to the show on. My name's Mark. I wish you the best of luck, the happiest of lives. And, of course, remember, money is the most important thing. It's your health, your family, your friendship, your faith, and your work and everyone around you. Help those less fortunate than yourself, and the money will take care of itself. My name's Mark. Thanks for listening.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.